Hello and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast, Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix.
A spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you.
The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at KingdomStrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando stroller rentals.
Amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow. Horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal. Imagination.
Today on the Dad Show, I'll be talking to Kevin Crossman about his July Alaska cruise on the Disney Wonder. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing great, and it's great to come back on the show and relive some fun memories.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we're really excited to hear about your Alaska cruise that you took this past July. I guess it's almost a year ago now. And why don't you kind of start with a little bit of the planning stage. When did you decide to take an Alaska cruise?
Well, we had taken several Alaska cruises on other carriers, notably Princess, two or three years ago. Okay. And my wife had been interested in going back with just the two of us as a kind of a romantic anniversary type thing. And she was looking at the different cruise lines, and obviously we're big Disney fans, and she was looking at the prices for Disney. And she saw a really fabulous deal where basically if we locked in a price and we were not particular about where we were exactly on the ship, we could get a deal that actually was about comparable in price to Princess. You know, because normally the Disney cruise is significantly more expensive than the competing lines. And so we didn't really care where we were going to be on the ship. We knew it was going to be a cabin with a window, and that was all we really cared about. And we got a great price, and so we locked it in, and we ended up being low in the ship, which worked out for us because my wife gets seasick, and lower in the ship is better.
Sure. So let's, before we let that go away, because that's a really good tip for people to watch for. You know, if you're interested in a Disney cruise, it's true. Disney cruises are a little more expensive than competing lines. But one of the sort of deals you can find occasionally on Disney ships are what are referred to as guarantee cabins. And as Kevin was talking about them, the guarantee staterooms, it means that you book into a broad category. So there are inside guarantee staterooms, or there are ocean view guarantee or veranda guarantee, and there are lots of different subcategories within those normally that you could choose from. But when you book a guarantee, all you're saying is, in Kevin's case, sounds like, you know, you booked an ocean view guarantee, which yep. meant that you knew you were getting an ocean view. You'd have a porthole of some sort, but it could be anywhere on the ship, and it could be anything from what would normally be the least expensive ocean view room to, you know, the most expensive ocean view room.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it was a great deal for us. We didn't know what our room was going to be until we got on the ship. That was sort of exciting in a way. but it helped us be able to, you know, afford the Disney cruise, because, like I said, you know, significantly more expensive than some of the competing lines. And we wanted to try something new, and obviously as Disney fans, we thought this would be a great opportunity.
Sure. Now, this is a seven-night cruise, is that right?
This was seven nights. It was leaving from Seattle last year, but I think this coming year they're coming in and out of Vancouver, British Columbia.
Right.
So for us, we live in the San Francisco Bay Area, it would kind of almost be the same difference either from a flight or a drive standpoint. We ended up driving because we wanted to spend some time in Seattle ahead of the cruise.
Sure, sure. All right, so you were departing out of Seattle in July, and tell us a little bit about how the boarding process works. You know, we've all heard about Port Canaveral, where Disney Cruise Lines has its own terminal and everything. How did it work boarding out of Seattle?
Well, it's funny because we went to the exact same parking lot in the exact same port and into the same exact building that we had gone into 3 years previous with Princess. And so there's a long-term parking lot that's right near the port. So, you know, you're paying some money, obviously, if you're driving your own car like we were. But it's super convenient. They have a little bus that takes you right down there. Our cruise was the only one leaving that day. And so, you know, basically there's a million Disney greeters with, you know, Mickey hands and people waving you in. And as long as you have your paperwork, they check it a couple times. But they move you along in that process very, very smoothly. At each stage, and the signs are well marked. All kinds of people in the terminal to direct you to the right location. So it was very, very helpful. And basically, we just got moved right through the process very quickly. Before you even board, they take your picture because, of course, with Disney, they take your picture everywhere you go, and this could be part of your photo package.
Right.
So that was all right. And then, up the gangway and into the ship. And then from there, again, helpful people to direct you to the location of your cabin.
All right. So you boarded the Disney Wonder right there in Seattle, and you found out your stateroom when you first checked in at boarding. Is that correct?
Right. During the initial paperwork phase, we said, here's our reservation, here's our passports, our identification.
Right, and that's
all that sort of stuff, and then they hand you a package, and that includes your stateroom and the keys.
Right.
All that stuff.
Okay. So you were on board, and what time did you arrive? Did you get there, early in the boarding process, later in the day? How did that work?
Well, because we were in a hotel in Seattle with a checkout time I think it was 11 a.m., we actually ended up going over there pretty early.
Okay.
We figured more time on the ship that way.
Sure.
And I don't know strategically if it's better to arrive early or late in terms of the crowd of people. I mean, I think unless you're really early or super late, you're probably going to have a lot of people regardless.
Right.
But it moved very, very smoothly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I asked mostly just because I was wondering, at this stage, so you were boarding fairly early. You had some time to kill on board before your room was ready. So what did you do to occupy yourselves?
Well, we basically did a little one through around the main areas, the promenade area, the area where they have the shops and that sort of thing. And then, of course, it's a cruise ship, so the first thing you do when you get on cruise is you find out where the buffet is and you partake. So we did take advantage of that as well, had a little snack, and just spent some time orienting ourselves with the ship. And I think for people that have never been on cruises before, it can be very overwhelming to orient yourself on a ship, even when you have a map in your cabin and maps all over the place. It usually takes several days before you get really comfortable. And, of course, that's the downside of a short cruise, a 3 or 4 day cruise. You're just getting used to the ship, and then you've got to get off. So with a 7 day or longer, it's always very much nicer because by about that third day, you really know where you're going. And so as experienced cruise people, we really wanted to get a leg up on understanding where everything was. And the really cool thing for us was that in terms of the ship layout, it was standard cruise stuff. But the theming that the Disney Cruise Line has done with some of their common areas is really, really spectacular. Right directly up from where we were staying, they had an adults-only bar that was, fully decked out with, mahogany and all kinds of leather and everything else. But there was this really interesting common area, which they called Route 66, which had kind of a Cars theme to it. And so already we were feeling this is definitely a Disney kind of experience.
Yeah, and, I'm glad you mentioned that because I think that one of the first reactions that some people might have to hearing that, you and your wife were going back to another Alaska cruise, and this time you were going by yourselves, and this is the time you chose the Disney Cruise Line, then they might be scratching their heads and wondering, why would two adults go back to a route they've already traveled and specifically seek out Disney Cruise Line to do it. And you kind of, you know, have led into one of the things I was going to ask about, which is, you know, the areas that are set aside for adults that maybe you got to spend a little more time with because you weren't traveling with kids this time.
Absolutely. They have an adults only, well, several adults only lounges, and certain lounges will switch over into adults only mode after a certain time in the evening, 8 or 9 o'clock. And then they have an adults only pool, which I used quite frequently. It was super warm that week in Alaska, and I went swimming, I think, 4 or 5 times that week, which is pretty amazing in Alaska, even in the summer. So, in a very warm pool. And then, they have, of course, Paolo is their signature adults restaurant, which you can book for an additional charge. Not too much, actually, but it's adults only. And so you totally get a very kids-free, very romantic kind of setting for you and your special someone who you're taking on the cruise with you.
All right. Well, let's talk about, you know, you had a 7-night cruise. So you had a time to really explore the ship. Why don't we talk about, you know, maybe the first few days there, you know, the first 2 or 3 days maybe, and talk about what in that first phase of the cruise you really most enjoyed. What was it that, you know, really caught you?
Well, the first day on our cruise was a sea day, and they take you from Seattle, and they take you in the Inside Passage area around Vancouver Island. And they're moving at a pretty good clip. And that is the day where if seasickness is going to strike, it will strike. It's the same day that we got hit with when we were on a previous Alaska cruise. And we got it not too bad on this one. But my wife, who, like I said, is prone to seasickness, did not have a fun time that day.
Yeah.
And even for me, it was a little queasy. And we had made the mistake. We were trying to get into Paolo, as I mentioned, and we actually chose a brunch setting on that first day because we had a reservation available.
Rough combination.
Yeah, and it didn't quite work out for her. But I got to tell you, the staff was really, really helpful because they could tell she was kind of under the weather. And so they made a special to-go package and box some stuff up that we could take back to the room that we were able to snack on, you know, later that day and into the next day, you know, some chocolates and strawberries and all kinds of goodies. So that at least made up for the fact that she couldn't fully, you know, enjoy the meal as I did because it was really good.
Well, now, I'm glad you bring that up because that's another thing we hear a lot from people who are considering cruises is that they're concerned about, you know, issues of seasickness. And as you mentioned, that first run out of Seattle is probably a pretty rough one because you're moving at a pretty fast clip and it's really, you know, just trying to get you there kind of thing. And probably actually why they've moved the departure for this cruise to Vancouver from Seattle, because you avoid a chunk of that little, you know, that loop you've got to do to go past Vancouver Island. But that said, you know, what strategies did you take going in to try and minimize some of the seasickness issues?
Well, In retrospect, we probably didn't employ very good strategies because we didn't take a very proactive approach. She had a few, I forget what it's called, but some sort of pills that she was taking. But they actually gave her something on the cruise itself once they realized that she was not feeling so good. And so actually the waiter at Paolo was the one who gave her the stuff. And they had that stuff freely available from the ship's doctor.
Good to know.
So it wasn't one of those things you wear behind your ear or whatever that is. In retrospect, we probably should have been more proactive about that. So live and learn, I guess.
Yeah, I got to say, you know, when we took our fantasy cruise, the behind the ear patch was a lifesaver for me because I do have seasickness issues as well. And between that and my daughter and I both use Bonine, which is sort of the non-drowsy or a non-drowsy formulation, a different formulation of Dramamine. Doesn't make you sleepy, but it has that same anti-nausea effect. And between the two of those, we did all right. But all right, so you did the Palo brunch, maybe didn't get to enjoy it as much as you would like, but it sounds like the crew and the staff there at Palo were a huge help.
Absolutely.
What was your first port, and maybe what was the experience there?
Well, it's interesting because having been on Princess, the way that the port excursions and the different activities occurred were very, very similar. Disney talks about their Disney difference, and there were certain things that we'll talk about, I'm sure, later. But in terms of the excursions, they didn't really have things that were wildly different from any of the other operators, at least as far as we could tell.
Okay.
Our first day was in Tracy Arm Fjord. So this is pretty typical of the Tracy Arm experience. You drive your cruise ship into the fjord, and you go past a bunch of icebergs, and you see some wildlife, and you know whatever you see is you know at the chance of the day.
Right. Right.
So, but we saw things like seals and eagles. Sometimes you see bears, on the sides of the cliffs and things like that. Sheep, that sort of thing, and all these cruise lines have a naturalist that they bring on board who does a talk and a lead up to the various events that are coming up. So on that first day, the naturalist was on board and gave a little talk about what we were going to see in Tracy Arm. And then during the Tracy Arm experience, that person was on narrating certain things at certain points during that experience. And so you go in, you see a glacier coming into this bay, and so it's very spectacular. And as we all know, these glaciers are receding, so there's lots of ice that is sheaving off, and you know, it's spectacular to see. And then one of the things that was interesting was that the Disney folks had some sort of cage that they went and they actually captured one of the smaller icebergs floating by, and then they brought it up to the main pool deck, and people could come and touch it and play with
cool.
it. That was pretty interesting. Yeah. So, again, this is, I think, a kind of a good way of getting used to the ship is you get a couple mostly sea days so you can experience all the things that are on ship in terms of, you know, relaxing with a drink or swimming in the pool or if you chose to do so. We didn't spend any time in the spa, but I know that that's a big popular thing for a lot of people. Disney has a lot of activities, obviously, for kids but also for families, and so they did things like game shows like the Newlywed Game, some of that sort of thing. But they also had Disney trivia. And so my wife and I did a couple of those. And I must say, I'm going to brag a little bit. We got probably the highest score that anyone had ever seen in their Disney Parks music trivia, because they had music from both coasts, which we were familiar with. And most people are only familiar with one or the other.
Right, right.
And so we got almost a perfect score.
Wow.
So,
congratulations.
Yeah, I must say, we were pretty proud of that. So, but it was good because we got to then talk to some of the people that were working the cruise and the activities. And one of the people we spoke with had gone through the Disney College program, which is something we're kind of thinking about for our sons. And so we got to talk to him about that a little bit, which was nice.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. And you know, those kinds of activities go on in various lounges, you know, throughout the ship, kind of, you know, throughout the trip, too, right?
Absolutely, yes.
You've kind of taken us through the beginning stages. We haven't talked much yet about dining, you know, outside of Palo and after your stomachs have settled. So how was the experience with the rotational dining on the Wonder through Alaska?
So one of, I think, the downsides of the way that we booked our cruise was that we ended up in the later dining, which the dinner was about 8 o'clock or so,
right,
which meant that you would see that evening's big entertainment show first and then eat afterwards. Now, for us, with no kids, the evening dining worked out just fine because we could stay up late or whatever. We didn't have kids that had, you know, sort of a biological clock that wasn't going to work for them to have that late dining. So it actually worked out fine for us. And they actually seated us with two other couples. Because, yes, as a matter of fact, we were about the only childless adults on the entire ship, at least at that dinner seating anyway. So, that's, this is what happens on a Disney ship, I guess. But it was really nice to have the rotational dining. Of course, you keep your waiter and your assistant waiter throughout the rotation. So they get to know you. They get to know the other people in your seating party, which can lead to some interesting conversations if those other people are picky about this or that or the other thing. And you build up a rapport and that sort of thing. So that's really nice.
So you had built up a rapport with your server. What kind of things stood out in the dining room?
Well, the environment and the theming of these restaurants was really top-notch. And it's nice to not have to see the same restaurant every day as well. And, of course, Disney, they have a very good design sense. And, of course, the animator's palette is famous for its magical effects and all that sort of thing. So we really had a good time with the restaurants. It was really, really a good experience. Of course, they also have a buffet that you could go to as well anytime. But we do like to have the sit-down meal experience, and the food was great. The staff was great. It was a really, really good experience.
And, you know, I've been meaning to ask this of people because I think Disney's dining system is really superior in a lot of ways, and I think it doesn't get enough credit. I was hoping you could compare it a little bit to what you had experienced when you had done a similar sailing on Princess.
Well, the cruise experience is very similar in that they cater to you in a kind of a way that you don't often have in the real world anymore.
Sure.
So they're waiting on you, and they come by with the little thing to wipe off the crumbs off your linen and everything else, and it's really a fun experience. But the way that Disney had these different restaurants and different vibes with respect to those restaurants actually made it a lot more fun, I thought. So nothing against any of the other cruise lines, but the way Disney does it, I think, is a little bit better, worth a little bit more.
Yeah, and, you know, it seems to me that from most of the folks I've talked to about this, although other lines do, you know, it's one of the things that people love about cruising is, you know, the whole dining experience and all of that, that at a lot of other lines, to get a unique environment, to get something a little different, you end up having to pay extra to do it. Whereas at Disney, on the Disney cruises, the assumption is that you're going to get something a little unique, a little different each night. And, you know, yes, there's still a super premium choice that you can make, but that you're going to get a unique and interesting dining experience, you know, every night just from the rotational dining. And they're not going to reach into your pocket for it.
Absolutely.
All right, so you're continuing on, you know, heading, I guess, what, farther north?
Yes, that's right. So our third day, we were in Skagway, which is the most northern point in our cruise. And there's all kinds of things to do in Skagway. And we've gone and done the White Pass Railroad, which takes you up this, you know, amazing hillside and out into the Yukon where you can do these different experiences. We had done that on a couple times on previous cruises, so we chose to not do that. But this is, an example of where Disney is offering you basically the same kinds of shore excursions that you could get at any other cruise line. One of the benefits for those who are not familiar is that if you book these shore excursions through your cruise company, the number one benefit, aside from convenience and getting those things just attached to your bill automatically, is that if, you know, the bus that goes out to the Yukon somehow breaks down or whatever, and they know that that's a bunch of Disney Cruise Line passengers, they're not going to leave, you know, at the normal sailing time until those folks are back. Whereas if you rent your own car and you go driving up into the Yukon, if you're not back by, you know, the time that they said they're going to leave, you're going to be having to find a hotel for the night or something like that. So
yeah, catching up is not easy.
Yeah, it's an important part, especially in Alaska, where it's hard to, you know, you can't drive anywhere, and you know, basically you're talking about a small airplane or something like that.
Right.
So we ended up doing the Yukon Suspension Bridge, which is a new tourist destination in the area. But basically, they have a big old suspension bridge over this giant ravine, and they drive you up. Have you spend some time there, and then they drive you back into town. And that, for us, was fine because we wanted to spend some time shopping and eating in the town of Skagway. Mm-hmm. And very charming. You know, all these towns are super, super touristy in that, you know, it's lots of jewelry stores, all kinds of liquor stores. It's just like if you went to, you know, name a tourist city like San Francisco and you went to their Fisherman's Wharf area. It's all very much in that vein.
Except much, much, much smaller.
Yeah, much, much smaller. But you know, each of these towns does have their own unique charms, and Skagway being a very old gold rush town, they have certain live performances that celebrate the gold rush, and it's, you know, easy to walk around. In our case, it was a beautiful day.
Okay. So after Skagway, what was the next thing that was part of your trip that kind of stood out to you?
Well, the next day was interesting because we went to Juneau, which is probably the least picturesque city on this cruise. And what we did end up doing was an excursion that was adults only. So this was billed as an adults only cruise, and so again, no kids. And so we went whale watching. We had a trip out to the Mendenhall Glacier for a while. We went someplace to have lunch at a salmon bake. Again, very prepackaged from a tourist standpoint, but in this case, it was nice to have the adults only option.
Sure.
So that we didn't have, you know, a bunch of kids, whatever, being sick. Not that I don't mind kids, but sometimes you want to be in adults-only mode, and that's where we were last summer.
You know, that actually leads me to a question that I'd been meaning to ask, which is I had another friend who had done an Alaskan cruise, not on a Disney ship, and was just sort of wondering aloud about this question because his reaction was, you know, they were on Norwegian. And they said, you know, we went on Norwegian instead of Disney, partially because, you know, it was less expensive, but also because we figured that, you know, Disney would be kind of overrun with kids and there would be maybe a little bit more adult atmosphere on Norwegian. And the problem was that it appeared that the kids didn't get into the kids club stuff at all. So we saw them all over the ship constantly. And they were actually kind of just wondering aloud whether maybe on the Disney ships where there are more things to keep the kids interested and involved, that maybe the ship itself, you know, the public areas weren't as overrun by kids.
Well, I would say during meal times and show times, you're going to see a bunch of kids
either way.
So I would say that didn't particularly – I didn't view that as particularly different from any other cruise line. And to the extent that they're probably went out of their way to have adults only areas on Disney because of this very issue. And if you gravitate to those areas, you're not going to see a bunch of kids. And so it kind of, you can choose how much you want to be in the mix. I think it's kind of person's choice. Now, that being said, I think this brings up a good point, which is, you know, what kind of entertainment, what are you doing on the ship, and how is it different with Disney? And
Certainly,
if your idea of a bunch of Disney musical songs and seeing characters everywhere you go, and princesses and Mickey with a different outfit every day, and photo opportunities with your favorite characters, if that kind of stuff doesn't turn you on, Disney Cruise Line is a really bad choice because it's like when you go to the theme parks, they have character opportunities, and of course the shows draw from this wealth of Disney musical history for their shows. So, you know, if you're not a fan of Disney stuff, Disney Cruise Line, definitely not a good choice.
Yeah, but if you're not a fan of that stuff, you're probably not listening to us right now anyway, so.
Probably, but.
All right, so let's talk about the shows for a minute because, you know, 7 nights on the cruise ship means that you were exposed to a whole range of onboard shows. Did you have an opportunity to check out the shows? And if so, which ones were your favorites?
Yeah, well, in addition to the Disney musical productions, which I'll talk about in a second, they also have your standard cruise fare where they bring in jugglers, comedians, that sort of thing. The difference with Disney, there was no adults-only R-rated version of the comedy show at midnight like you'd see on a lot of cruises. But the musical showcases were truly a step above the normal cruise stuff, not just because of the way that Disney can draw from a whole repertoire of classic, memorable, excellent songs, but in terms of the stage production with they had, you know, stages that had moving parts that would, you know, someone would come up from behind the stage and lots of lighting effects and some light pyrotechnics. It was really, really spectacular. And I don't recall exactly the names of all the shows, but they were quite well done. Interestingly, the one that I remember not loving as much was the Toy Story musical one, which I know some people, they were talking about bringing that to Broadway. And I didn't quite get why you would do that. But the other stuff where it was, you know, they had, you know, characters and a lot of stuff that people who've gone to the theme parks are, you know, familiar with Mickey seeing some sort of magical experience, that all that kind of stuff, just really, really good entertainment. So again, worth it, better than your average cruise line. So you're paying a little bit more, and I didn't feel like we got gypped or anything like that from the cost perspective, because it was a step up.
Sure. And, you know, I think it's important too. It blows me away that when you see these shows and, you know, they're doing 3 and 4 different shows on a 7-night cruise, that's the same cast.
Oh, yeah.
And it just blows me away how talented that repertory company is to be able to handle, you know, a really diverse group of shows. I mean, yeah, it's all Disney music, but, you know, they've got people playing very different roles from night to night, and they do a terrific job.
Absolutely. And, you know, lots of choreography and dancing, and, you know, there are star players and there are supporting players. But, yeah, I agree. Really well done.
Okay, so you've hit Juneau, and you've done your adults-only whale-watching excursion. Did you catch some whales or get some good views of whales?
Got some great views of some humpback whales. We didn't see any orcas, but other than that, it was a great experience.
Okay.
And then Ketchikan was the next port. This, to us, is the best that Alaska has. It's such a charming town with little stores and all kinds of activity. Really a great time. And for us, because we'd been to Ketchikan before, we skipped the Lumberjack Show, which is right off the cruise terminal.
Okay. But
for folks who have never gone before, that's definitely a good opportunity because, again, it's right off the ship. So first thing in the morning when you dock, the Lumberjack Show is a great way to start out. We ended up just wandering the town. We had some great donut muffins at the Sweet Mermaids Cafe and spent a lot of time relaxing there. Now, Ketchikan is the rainiest city in the United States. Some claim to fame of that sort. And we did catch a little rain there, so be prepared when you go to Ketchikan.
Right. Bring your poncho.
It is a charming town.
Okay.
And then our last port of call was in Victoria, Canada. And the unfortunate thing with Victoria is that for folks who haven't gone, it's the capital of British Columbia, and it has a very much of an English influence. And, you know, they have the tea at the Empress Hotel is the famous activity that you could do there. Of course, they have Burchard Gardens, which is a famous garden with all kinds of flowers and landscapes, and it's really spectacular. But we did not actually get into Victoria until 6 o'clock at night, and then we left at about 11. Now, at that time of year, the sunset is at like 9:30 or something, so you did have quite a bit of daylight there, but it obviously did not leave us with a lot of time to do lots of different things. And
sure.
I think that's a lot of these cruises, they have a morning cruise line that comes in, and they have one that comes in the evening, and we were on the evening call that night.
Right.
The cruise, the dock here in Victoria is quite a ways from their main harbor and downtown area, and they say it's walking distance. We actually walked it a couple of years ago on Princess, and it's a good 20 to 30 minute walk.
So you would recommend a cab?
I would recommend a cab, which is what we did. And we just wandered the streets, and all kinds of activities going on, and shopping and dining, and just a really charming city. And those excursions to Burchard Gardens or some of the other activities, I think, are well worth it, too, if you choose to do that.
Sure. Okay, so you enjoyed sort of the small-town atmosphere in Ketchikan, then a little more cosmopolitan town in British Columbia. You go on and reboard that night, and you're chugging your way back towards Seattle.
Yeah.
So why don't you talk a little bit about sort of the wrap up of the cruise and how that worked?
Well, with all these cruises, you know, you're charging for your drinks right on your room key, and the nice thing about Disney is that they do have a Up on the top part of the ship, they do have a drink station where you can go and get sodas anytime you want. I mean, you have to go there. You have to, you know, bring a cup or whatever. But at least you can get a soda anytime you want up there. They also have a soft serve ice cream up there that's basically open all the time. You can go and get a little snack. And they had a lot of food that was available all the time. But, if, of course, if you're in a lounge or someplace like that and you order a Coke, you are paying for that Coke. You are paying for your drinks. You are paying for your pins, your stuffed animals, all the good Disney memorabilia that you want to buy in the gift shop.
Right.
Plus all the Alaska merchandise and everything else. So, of course, that last night, right before you go to bed, they do slip you the bill. And, of course, anyone who's taken a cruise knows you do get a little bit of a sticker shock. What? I spent that much on drinks? But, hey, that's what credit cards are for, right? So, but obviously this would be a point to emphasize, obviously, in terms of planning, is that be prepared for the fact that you're going to spend all this extra money on some of these excursions. Some of these things you may not be planning months in advance, although Disney offers you the opportunity to book some of these things well in advance. But things will come up. You will partake. Be prepared that you are going to spend a bunch of money on the ship.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key really is that you're in control of it. And you can do this either way. Realize that you're going to have these opportunities. For example, the excursion things. Even if you choose not to book them in advance, you can get an idea of what they're going to cost in advance. And I would really encourage people to do that research, you know, check out what the Disney Cruise Line says it's going to cost, even if you're going to end up using a third party instead and you're going to, you know, take the gamble that you can make it back to the ship. That's fine. But if that's the case, you know, at least what Disney says it's going to cost is going to be on the higher end, and it can help you plan. You know, you can certainly avoid extra expensive drinks and things, you know, like Kevin was saying, you've got the ability to, you know, there's soft drinks always available. There's soft serve always available. There's, you know, the pizza counters all, you know, open mm-hmm. most of the time. You've got the buffet that's open a lot of hours. So there are plenty of places where you can get things that you don't have to pay extra for. But again, you know, the drink of the day is going to sound good a few times.
Absolutely. And Disney does allow you to bring your own alcohol on board up to a certain amount, which I can't imagine you'd be potentially able to go through in a 7-day cruise.
We were joking about that actually in the Facebook group today. And I think that the formulation I put for it is that you know, Disney allows you to bring an amount of alcohol that's reasonable for personal consumption is the way that they phrase it, which in my estimation means that, you know, you can physically carry it yourself on board, and it doesn't look like you're trying to open a speakeasy in your stateroom.
That's right. And, yeah, so and you bring a flask, and you could, you know, make your single a double when you go out to the bar and save a little money, too.
but it is – I'm glad you did bring that up and we didn't let that go by, because that's true on all of the Disney cruises. And, you know, you can even bring your own bottle of wine and bring it into the dining room. They'll charge you a corkage fee. Yep. It's about $15, I believe. But, you know, it's a little bit cheaper than a bottle of wine at the you know, in the dining room itself. Mm-hmm. And you have the choice of, you know, depending on where you shop, you may have a broader selection than you would have on board. So you've reviewed your bill. Let's say just on the outside chance, something shows up in your bill and you're just not sure what it is. What can you do?
Yeah, that's a good question. And they do have, they say write it on the materials. If you have any questions, you have any objections, whatever. You can go down to the main lobby and talk to someone there, and they'll explain it, or you can talk about what the issue is. And we didn't have any problems, but I'm sure Disney will do a good job of taking care of it. This is also the time where you might want to add to your bill automatically. You can add in tips for, you know, certain people. Some of that stuff is actually pre-booked, but they give you envelopes if you want to go above and beyond and personally thank your, you know, head waiter or whatever for the job that they did, and or your room steward, that sort of thing. So A lot of those tips are built in now, which is good, but they do give you an opportunity to sort of add to your bill or give you an envelope that you, if you want to have a personal conversation with that person about their additional gratuity.
Right.
So that's all taken, you know, you can take care of that the last night or obviously the morning of, and then they will also ask you whether you have an early flight or a late flight or if you're driving. And so they assign you basically to a section that can leave at a certain time so that obviously people with early flights can have an opportunity to get off the ship faster than people who are driving or have late flights. So that's kind of nice.
Right, right. And so since you guys were driving, I assume you were in one of the later departure groups?
Yep, yep. And that worked out fine. We weren't in a big old rush.
Sure. And did you do a last morning breakfast, or did you skip it? I know it seems to be about 50-50. Some people, you know, they love it. It's sort of their farewell to the ship. And some people are like, I'm going to sleep as late as I can get away with.
Well, actually, I had smuggled some of the donut muffins from Ketchikan onto the ship, and I was eating those for breakfast. So I did not do the breakfast that morning. I think I went up and got coffee. That was it.
Okay. Well, that does sound like a good alternative. All right. So we've kind of caught to the end of the trip. So let's go through and maybe summarize real quickly. If you were to give people, you know, one piece of advice about taking a Disney Cruise Line Alaska cruise, what advice would you give them?
Well, I think I would have them understand that Disney is a premium cruising experience and that you are going to get a higher level of quality for your food, for your staff, for your entertainment. But at the end of the day, if that isn't worth as much as Disney's charging, you will get a very similar experience from an excursion, from a looking outside your ship experience as you would on another cruise line. But if you feel like the Disney experience, the characters, you know, being in the bubble, so to speak, while being on a ship is worth it to you, then by all means, Disney Cruise Line is certainly an engaging opportunity. For people who are fans of the theme parks, the Cruise Line definitely is sort of a new way of experiencing that sort of Disney magic in a new place and a new time.
Okay. And do you have, aside from the cost issue, any sort of warnings or cautions you would give to people who are considering that Alaska cruise?
Well, those glaciers aren't getting any bigger, so if you think you are interested, you might want to book earlier than later. And, you know, waiting for 5 years, you might have a different experience than you will this year. So I would definitely take the opportunity if you have it. Yeah, Alaska, the cruising experience in Alaska is really, really outstanding. And for people who've done the Caribbean cruises, and it's definitely not the whole beach culture thing and bikinis and all the drinks on the beach and all that sort of thing. But in terms of the experience of going to these different places and seeing these cities that you would never go to in a car or by your typical jumbo jet, it really is a great experience. And for Americans to see, you know, our 49th state is pretty exciting too.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing, Kevin. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us for The Dad Show. We'll be back on Sunday with the panel show, looking ahead to Star Wars weekends at Walt Disney World. See you then.